I definitely feel like the Grinch is like, I feel like I relate more to the Grinch every year.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God, yes.
Welcome to a very special holiday bonus episode. My name is Nicole, and I'm on the team here at Realm that brings you the shows you're listening to on Adrenaline. I sat down with some of our brilliant creatives to discuss the best stories for the holiday season, the movies, the books, and of course, the podcasts. We explore seasonal favorites like Scrooged, It's a Wonderful Life, Love Actually, and make our arguments for some unofficial holiday stories, and why Realm's Overleaper is one of them.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hypertheical.
I'm Heather. I'm the marketing lead at Realm.
Hi, I'm Rhoda. I'm a producer over at Realm.
Hi, I'm Marco. I'm a producer at Realm.
Thanks for sitting down with me today, everyone. To kick us off, let's start by talking about what makes a holiday story a holiday story. Like, what are the elements that you think that you need in order to be considered a movie, a show, a book, a podcast for this time of year?
I think it has to be during some time, like cold time. Like for me, that's very important. It needs to feel like cozy. Like it doesn't have to be snow, but something cold.
Like lots of wool. Like I love when people are wearing like wool and scarves and cozy socks and things.
Yes, I think the attire is very important and just the like vibe of cold times. It doesn't have to be like a specific holiday, but just like I can tell you're cold. That works for me.
You need to be shivering in order for this to be a Merry Christmas movie.
I guess the flip of that is, now I'm going on a tangent already, but sometimes I see New York holiday type situations, and there's some lady, and she's walking around with no beanie, coat open, super cute, and I'm like, that's not, you're wearing 90 pairs of, like, layers. There's just... you're a mess. You're sweaty under the beanie. You know what I
mean? Everyone is like an amorphous blob in New York.
Yeah. We're like all versions of that Maggie Simpson star where she's in that like onesie and she's just like spread out, you know? But anyway, I digress. Yeah. I guess you should be cold. Although I grew up in California and it never was cold. So, you know, there's that.
I also think you need to have like a really saccharine message that at the end of the day, it's like, who your family is, that really counts. Or like, to be there for your friends no matter what. Or that if you only believe, things will come true. It always ends up being a little bit reverent at the end. Like, it has to do that in order to be a holiday movie.
Absolutely. Like, you, like basically the main character arcs in a way where, you know, it's, you know, I mean, my favorite holiday movie ever, it's an old one. It's Scrooged, and it's with Bill Murray, and it's like the present, past, future kind
of
parable.
I love that you think Scrooged is an old movie. That cracks me up.
It is.
I know. I was like thinking you were going to do like black and white movie when she said that was old.
Oh, no. Like, yeah. I guess it's just like, you know, what makes once we're getting into messaging, what makes some of these holiday movies so memorable is the fact that they speak to your actual anxieties, you know, which I think maybe is what you're getting at in terms of a message and it being saccharine mm-hmm. and irreverent, but like still kind of speaking to this like base desire, which is that like, and I think we're talking about a specific kind of holiday movie, right? But it deals with family, you know, so your anxiety is about being trapped with your family and then like, the juxtaposition of the anxiety of being alone forever. And like, how do you like merge those two fears into like a neat and tidy story, you know, where we like learn something at the end or where we learn to love someone and love ourselves and let people in, which I'm even though I like have that tone as I'm saying it, I actually think that they're really fun and gorgeous, which again, will loop me back to Scrooged, which is the best movie ever. holiday movie.
It has to give you the warm and fuzzies. Like, it has to, like, you need to feel like your heart grew three sizes that day.
Oh.
It's gotta, like, give you.
Yeah.
I will say, the Grinch, is it terrible? Is it
nothing
excellent?
Beats the Grinch.
Is it, I mean, both?
Boris Karloff doing Dr. Seuss, nothing beats that.
Wait, who's Boris Karloff?
I'm sorry? Did you just say who is Boris Karloff? Because I will.
I'm thinking of Jim
Carrey.
I will
reach through my laptop and
illuminate us, please. I actually don't know who that is either, Margo.
Wow. Okay, the original animated Grinch by Chuck Jones, by the way, who's awesome.
Oh, okay.
Boris Karloff did all the narration. He did all the voices, and Boris Karloff, of course, is
incredible.
Most famously, the original cinematic Frankenstein. Or the creature, I should say. So, and he's had a pretty cool film career in those kinds of movies.
Wait, I want to take this back to the Grinch, which is like, what was it? I mean, you know, this is like a really, really articulated arc, right? Like, what, you know what I mean? In terms of like, he starts off, everything's like annoying at best, and then like a real depressing bummer at worst, and then what, like, you know what I mean, like, how does he get to the end, like, tell us.
It's like a slow deconstruction of cynicism throughout the story. It's Cindy Lou Who.
Well put.
It's like the little bright Cindy Lou who
Santa Claus
teaches him to see some of the bright parts. And I mean, the Grinch, the live action one, which apparently took like Jim Carrey a full day to sit in that makeup, is very quotable. It's just a lot. I find it a lot in one to sit in one viewing and go through it in its entirety. But if you look at little clips, like, you have the excellent line when he's looking at the list of Whoville occupants and he's going like, hate, hate, double hate, loathe entirely.
Nice.
Right. So it's like this thing that like shakes you, right? Because for some reason we are associating, like, it's, you know what it is? It's like the event horizon of the year closing out. And you're like, holy shit, I'm an asshole. Mm. And then, you know, you see a movie where there's an asshole and you identify with them. And then they're kind of, you know, bending towards this better version of themselves. Yeah. You know what I mean? More compassionate, more patient, more curious. And then you're like, that could be me.
I never thought of it that way. Now I'm going to be watching films differently
I definitely feel like the Grinch is like, I feel like I relate more to the Grinch every year. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh my God, yes.
I'm like, I get it. He wanted to stay home with his dog. I feel that.
It's true. It's like holiday movies are returning us to a more childlike state, like a more open state where we haven't been like caked in experiences that have made us narrow our eyes and scrutiny at like joyful opportunities like the Grinch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're all the Grinch. That's what you're saying.
Yes, we are all the Grinch. One of us.
It seems like the Grinch is one of those incredible movies, or, you know, just narratives actually, that kind of can bridge the gap between young and old, you know, in a way that I also think Home Alone can do that really well. Because you have the child's perspective of being just kind of stomped on and the youngest and the forgotten one. And then he's literally forgotten and then somehow like takes down these two burglar bad guys. And, you know, and it's like that one's fascinating because instead of it being about the arc being, how do I become more curious and passionate? It's more like, how do I become more independent? And there's also something like really weirdly.
And capture criminals.
Yeah, capture criminals. You know what I mean? But there is something like weirdly like Zen. Well, also the mom is the woman who plays Moira. So anyway, that's like a digression. But I think, I don't know, like, why is that? Why does that movie like capture the imagination? I think it's because, yeah, I mean, you want a win for this kid who's like so adorable and so smart. But I think that it's like this like really rapid, like kind of boiled down coming of age story within the course of, you know, 3 days or whatever, however long he's away for, like reaching for this independence.
I was going to say that I love like holiday movies for adults, like the since the early 2000s. And I think there's also this like nostalgia. It feels too soon to say nostalgia, but there is a bit of nostalgia for like the early 2000s Christmas movies that are getting a second life, like The Holiday, The Family Stone, like Love Actually, like all of those came out in I think the years like 2000 to 2004. And there's like a huge fan base for those every year. And they are very geared towards the adult holiday experience. But, you know, Love Actually, for all its problems, and it does have many and problematic elements, my favorite holiday movie. I watch it every year, and every year I have a different subplot that I like the most.
Okay, well, even though, what year's this one's?
I haven't watched it yet this year, but I think it'll go back to Colin Firth because I just, you know, I love him. Is it actually romantic that they can't communicate and still fall in love? No. Does he wear charming turtlenecks and do his like very quintessential clip speaking? Yes. Will I love it? Yes. You know, I also love Hugh Grant's little jig that he does to the Jumper Sisters jump or the Pointer Sisters jump for my love. Is it creepy that he's falling in love with the woman who serves him tea? And yes. Is it also like have a lot of cute scenes? Also, yes. That movie brings out a lot of conflicting feelings, but generally I just love it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there are, you just love a rom-com set during Christmas, right? You know, I mean, I think Love Actually is like specifically, you know, not an anthology rom-com, but an ensemble rom-com, right? But again, it comes back to this idea that we just like don't super want to be alone, right? Or you know, I mean, we want to idealize the version of ourselves that like knows how to live with other people and love other people and be loved, you know, which is just like, that's where like this kind of the saccharine part can come in. But we have like so much more latitude for something saccharine at this time of year. You know, if you tried to give me something like that in March, absolutely not. But some reason, you know, it's like kind of cold and there's a Christmas tree up in my house and like all things go.
Especially for like, quote unquote, dead week, the week between Christmas and New Year's, like that is the time to not think a lot, to not do a lot, to just kind of sit and watch and eat. And you don't want anything like too challenging, speaking at least for myself. And it's like
an insult to all those movies. They are challenging. They are trying to fall in love with their sweetheart that came back from the big city and trying to take over farm.
Oh, yeah. Those are so good. No, or like the family stone, which is like, you know, like the uptight bitch from the city is like coming home to her boyfriend's house and everyone hates her. And like, just like, you know, notably, you know what I remember so much about this movie is, God, what is the sister's name that's in The Notebook?
Rachel McAdams? No, not Rachel McAdams.
Okay. Well, whatever. Yeah, I think it is, right? Rachel McAdams is the sister in the movie. And when she arrives at the house, she is carrying an NPR tote. And I was just like liberal family. You know what I mean? Like not willing to accept that this woman has just like worked super hard on her career and is really focused, you know?
Has anybody else watched, like, when I was looking through, like, holiday time movies, While You Were Sleeping, which I watched on a plane a few years ago, but wait, basically...
This is a Sandra Bullock movie, right?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And it's, yes. It's like, interesting because she basically inserts herself into this family because this guy goes into a coma and then she had, like, had a crush on him and then just pretends that they were dating.
And that's incredible.
Yeah, yum. And then starts spending all this time with the family, and they all love her. And I was just like, wow, this is a very interesting take.
Wait, critically, same she kind like of... falls in love with her brother.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Or no, his brother, sorry.
She falls in love
with her. Don't leave that part out.
She falls in love with his brother, ultimately. And then he wakes up, and you're like, they're like, oh, but you're dating him, but you fall in love with him. What happened? You actually don't know each other at all.
Yeah, and also this is like just romance tropes, you know what I mean? Like, which we could talk about for a full day. But yeah,
those are holiday movies to me.
They are. They do. I think they do encapture the warm and fuzzy feeling that we were saying, like, does qualify you as a holiday movie. But then there's like the classics, you know, It's a Wonderful Life.
I love It's a Wonderful Life. I
tell us why you love it.
Never miss it. Oh my God. I mean, the protagonist is a guy who dreams of leaving his hometown and seeing the world and making something of himself. And he goes through setback after setback after setback. He, you know, by the middle of the movie, he just hates the direction his life has gone. And he gets a wake-up call. And you know, by the end of it, he realizes just how special his life is. And that kind of reversal just really works for me as a holiday movie. I also think the movie is so well made. I mean, the performances, the casting, the performances, the humor in it, it never fails to crack me up, no matter how many times I see it.
I love It's a Wonderful Life as well. I think it's like touches on all the themes that we just discussed, but in a way that's like very earnestly affecting. Like, I always cry a little bit at the end. That said, it also scares me a lot.
Why?
It's a Wonderful Life is a scary film to me. Well, because the concept is that he never existed. And when I first saw that as a kid, I found that absolutely terrifying. Like, I can understand that. Scary. It's like, it's a horror movie.
It's very much a Twilight Zone episode. I mean, it's exactly the sort of thing they'd put on the Twilight Zone.
I always found A Christmas Carol very scary as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is really scary. Well, yeah, the ghost scary. Of it's Christmas ghost. Present. Yeah. But like, just like, you know, it's a Grim Reaper type, or at least like in kind of modern renderings, right? Just because isn't it? I don't know if this is in the original version, but they like show you your own gravestone, right?
That's very intense. Depending on the interpretation. I mean, like I said, the written version of it or the audiobook version of it, they are just awesome. Those moments.
Ooh,
yeah,
it's to that.
Beautiful, beautiful writing. Yeah, and there's a long tradition of like scary Christmas stuff, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas and A Christmas Carol. There are others, I'm sure, but yeah, there's the idea of mixing Christmas with a scary story is a cool one, I think.
I think the reason that like the horror scary movie works is because of the pressure around the holidays. Like, you need to show up, you need to be in good spirits. It's also like this referendum on your quality as a person, like especially A Christmas Carol. Like that is like, have you lived up to your potential? Have you proven yourself to be like the best you can be, the most open, the most giving, the most loving? And like, he has it and he should probably chill a bit. But like, I think that there is a bit of a horror in the pressures that people feel around the holiday. I mean, I don't remember what The Nightmare Before Christmas is about. I love the, what's this? But I don't remember like the plot.
A Nightmare Before Christmas is basically a super fantastical story about these isolated realms of certain holidays, and one of the main citizens of the Halloween realm discovers he accidentally crosses into the Christmas realm, and you know, he it happens at a point in his life where he's like, what's it all for? And then suddenly he realizes he can bring Christmas to Halloween, and his attempts to mash them up are hilarious and very musical.
Yeah, and like, but like critically, so Jack Skellington is the person who goes into the Christmas world, but he is enthralled by how creepy the Christmas world is. First of all, he thinks Santa Claus is named Sandy Claus, and he thinks of him as this like delightfully like scary little man who comes down chimneys and then like gives you coal, and there are these little elves, and like everything is reimagined with this tinge of that's kind of creepy and sideways and funny and delightful. It's like all of these things rolled up into one. And so it's just like this really fresh take for this person, Jack, going through this existential crisis and being kind of bored with the same old in Halloween. And he finds this fresh infusion of weird and delightful things that he can make scary and integrate into the world. And it's about kind of town resistance and kind of the merging of cultures. It's about a million different things, and it's really gorgeous.
But when you were talking about like the silliness with the creepy, with the heightened elements, I was thinking of Black Friday.
Yeah, so good.
One of our shows, so funny. Which is about like a zombie invasion of a Walmart-esque style show.
I was just going to say that capitalism is really scary. And I think the idea of Black Friday in general is scary. Like having seen videos of people rushing around. Yeah. So I think the idea of having zombies attack right before Black Friday, I'm like, people are
the mindless hordes.
Like,
it felt
like perfect, like a perfect analogy for like how I actually feel about Black Friday.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I love that it was from the perspective of an employee, like a sales associate of one of those like big box stores, you know, just like trying to get home and like literally bring milk home and see his family. And I mean, it takes like this kind of analogy of the ravages of capitalism really far in this hysterical way where even kind of the ritual that kicks off the zombie apocalypse horde is this manager, not the main character, but this middle manager, like desperate to get a promotion. So he tries to like spell cast something like using different pieces of like the hottest new like things that everyone needs to buy in the basement of the store. And then, you know, awakens some sort of curse. And I think it's so, so funny. And also Fred Armisen, right? Like his delivery is kind of pitch perfect.
Yeah. I always picture it as The Walking Dead meets Superstore, which is a great half-hour comedy if no one's watched it. Let's also talk about unofficial holiday movies. Like, what are, you think, the official unofficial holiday movies? And then what are they to you? And I shouldn't just say movies. Any kind of story. Like, I feel like the known one is Die Hard. That is, people always say that is an unofficial holiday story.
Well, I mean, I love Die Hard just because I love action movies, but I think, you know, when you think about some of the most memorable holiday properties, right, they are either what you were talking about with this like very, very human, sweet element to it, or they're totally adjacent to the holiday. They're just like kind of taking place and it's like people getting shot with like a Christmas tree in the background, right? And people like remember it because it's so fun, you know? But I think, you know, well, another holiday thing that I revisit, you know, every couple of years is one of the Michael Keaton Batman movies. Mm. Have you guys seen the one with Michelle Pfeiffer in it as Catwoman? Mm-hmm. She's incredible. I mean, they're both incredible, but there's this really amazing scene where I think she's like depressed and it's during the holiday and she's drinking too much wine. And there's a neon sign that says, "Hello there." And then she uses the wine bottle and then pokes out the O and then the T and it says, "Hell here," you know? So like kind of dark and classic, and this is like very, I think people like dark.
That's
takes
another
on
one by Tim Burton. So he's obviously, you know, got a lot of thoughts on the subject.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
Yes, I was going to say, speaking of superhero movies, I was going to say Iron Man 3, which just, people don't like Iron Man 3 generally, but it's just takes place during the holidays. All of the action, you're mm-hmm. like, oh, it's snow. There's snow things happening. Like Iron Man, they put like a Santa hat on him, but it's not about the holidays, but it still, I feel like, touches on all those things mm-hmm. that the holiday mm-hmm. movies do, where it's like teaching him a lesson and he meets this little child and he has to deal with like all of these things going on inside of him. But it's not like an actual, like, I don't know if they ever address the fact that it's the holiday time, but it's just like there and it's like implied.
The Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. Has anybody seen it?
No. Should we?
Oh, it's awesome. I highly recommend the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did. It's only 45 minutes. It's hilarious. It's heartwarming. It's delightful. The songs that they got for it are great. I don't want to spoil it, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, I love getting lost in like a sci-fi action adventure. Like Marigold Breach is one that I would love to listen to while I'm wrapping presents. I feel like it could take you out of your present moment and like transport you while you're doing like your mundane prep tasks for the holidays.
Yeah, for sure. Because there's like, because there's this element of, well, you know, the deep world building that went into Marigold Breach is absolutely incredible and does remind you of those like epic franchises that are coming out around the holidays, but also the intimacy of those two characters and that kind of arc and potential romance and whatever it is. It has all of these elements that we've been talking about in terms of just trying to, you know, well, I guess it's like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's like there's a connection between the two of them and they're investigating it. And like, even though like there is no holiday adjacent stuff to it, we'll always come back to how to connect with people around the holidays, you know?
Yeah. And people becoming better through like connection and love mm-hmm. and like more noble, more brave, stronger, all of that stuff. But I was going to say, I don't think it actually even needs to have holiday visuals in order to be a holiday movie. I think that there is such a thing called the winter blockbuster. And these are the films that come out between Thanksgiving and New Year around like generally like December 17th, December 18th is a big release day. These movies are, this is, you know, Harry Potter came out that time of year. Lord of the Rings came out that time of year. Star Wars. The new trilogy came out all around that time of year as well. These are all my winter blockbusters. They're like big franchises that have no elements of like winter of anything. Mm-hmm. And they are to me holiday films because every time I watch them, I think of like the first time I watched them, which was around this time of year. And it's like a big deal for me and my family to get ready to go see one of these movies that we're very excited about. And it reminds me of home. And I feel like action films and blockbuster films, they also tap into that itch, which is that it's like, you know, it will likely end well, but you're going to have a lot of fun until you get to that ending.
I feel that way about musicals. Like I'm just like very weirdly Les Mis, like stuff like that would come out. Like they always like,
yes.
Yes, they release all these movies that are like big musical movies that families can watch together around the holidays. And then I'm like, there's nothing inherently holiday-y about Les Mis. Like, I guess it's cold.
They're all very cold.
But like, there's something about it that feels holiday-y because it came out that time of year, and it's like something you could watch with your whole family, and it's like 3 hours long. I don't know. It's like an epic.
Yeah, you guys are talking about like family-friendly things with like very, very noble messages and like big world building and stuff like that. But, you know, counterpoint, which is that Twilight was a holiday movie that came out on Thanksgiving every year, 4 years in a row. and like, sure. Most people, or no, a lot of people think it's terrible. Most people fucking love it. But like, you know, and it's,
I'm one of them. Yeah,
potentially a terrible portrayal of the, an inaccurate portrayal of the BDSM community, but I still think it's like hysterical. You know what I mean? That was like the big holiday blockbuster. I think I saw all four of them in movie theaters too.
I feel like Overleaper could also be a holiday story. It could be like the, the wintertime version of Independence Day. You know, it's like bam, bam, action, have to save the world. Like, you could see a whole family going to see it in theaters or, like, sitting around a fire and listening to it. There also doesn't have to be a fireplace. I've never had a holiday with a fireplace, and it's very sad to me. So I'm going to say sitting around anything listening to it would be a great family activity.
If you made it where it was like they were going to assassinate the president at the Christmas tree lighting.
Yeah, I was going to say Overleaper is incredible, but I didn't think of it as family entertainment necessarily. You know what I mean?
I mean, there's a child.
Well, give him a child. Well, okay, actually, you know, what we didn't get to talk about was Gremlins, which is just like the, you know, because like that is a movie that tons of children watched. I was one of them. And then I loved it and I thought it was so good. And I rewatched it recently and it's total insanity. Like just from every aspect you could imagine, every entry point you have of it, you're just like, what the hell is this? First of all, the gremlins are so weird. I don't even know what they are. Are they aliens? But anyway, the way that they multiply, like there are all these arbitrary rules around them, right? They can't get wet. They can't eat after midnight. Whatever it is, right? You're just like, where did these come from? Like they were stoned making these rules up, right? Like they're not based off of anything. And then some of them are nice. And they just run amok over Christmas time. Like I don't even know what the hell happened. Does anyone else seen it or remember it?
I've never seen it, but I feel like they did it for merchandise. I'm just guessing.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. So capitalism is evil.
Christmas monsters, by and large, I think are fun. I mean, my dream Christmas movie is for Guillermo del Toro to do a Krampus film.
Oh, damn.
I think that would be fantastic. Ooh.
There is a Krampus film, right? Watch. But I've never seen it. But
oh, yeah. I think there's more than one. Mm-hmm. But what I want is for del Toro to tackle it and do it, you know, a la Pan's Labyrinth or something.
Can you tell us more about the... It's Scandinavian, right? Like Krampus? Like, does anyone...
Oh, Krampus? It's like most of Christmas, Krampus is from Northern European folklore, I believe. And it's basically, he's basically a goat-like counterpart to Santa Claus, who...
Delightful.
Who's, yeah, his job is to, punish the naughty children on Christmas Eve. He's not seen as like the enemy of Santa Claus or even, you know, the enemy of humans. He's just another holiday spirit who has a function. And
yeah. Everyone has a role.
He's pretty scary. There are actually Krampus parades that take place throughout the world. I mean, you can YouTube this stuff. It's awesome. Krampus is an amazingly underappreciated aspect of the holidays.
Well, you just did remind me that we, like, everything we've discussed, like, you know, apart from Christmas Carol and all the different variations of it, it's just, like, all of these pieces of media downplay, like, the scary, punitive, like, elements that comes from these original kind of, you know, pagan holiday-esque stories, right? You know, I mean, if Christmas is just like an amalgamation of different like pagan rituals, right, from all over the world, to like, it's yeah, there's something scary, like you're supposed to be scared, right? You're supposed to be like, I don't know if atonement's the right word, but it is a period of reflection where if you were naughty, it's like you either, you know, at best you got coal, and then at worst, like Krampus came to, who the fuck knows, eat you. Like, you know what I mean? This like scary goat demon coming to punish you.
That actually goes back to what, you know, a lot of us were saying earlier about what elements constitute a holiday movie. And they all involve some form of self-reflection, right? I mean, because the main character is usually on a journey from being, you know, maybe not in a completely bad place, but in not a great place, and they're finding their way to a good place. And I think that's an element that a lot of these stories have in common.
Or there's like a, you know what we didn't get to talk about is Edward Scissorhands.
Is that a holiday? How is that a holiday movie?
Oh, the snow! The cookies!
Oh, okay.
The snow. I don't
Eric
actually
know. He's crafting.
Yeah, he's very crafty.
Oh, yeah.
Another Tim Burton movie.
Another Tim Burton movie. You're right. I love a Tim Burton movie. Right. But, you know, like, yeah, I guess I assumed it took place around the holidays, but it definitely took place during snowy season. And that is kind of another take on what we perceive to be a monster, you know, and this kind of empathetic look at people who are, you know, the people who are the ones who terrorize others, right? Are just like trying to live their lives. They're just trying to like, be a dude who cuts hair, and yet, you know,
everyone's terrified. He just has scissor hands.
It's got holiday elements because it takes place in like a very sunny suburban area where everything is the same, right? And at the end of the movie, I believe that there's a holiday party. Winona Ryder's wearing this beautiful white dress, and she comes out and meets him on the lawn, and they bid their adieus. Spoilers for Edward Scissorhands. And then he goes up to his creepy castle.
It's like
and
30 years old. It's okay.
Yeah. He's making beautiful ice sculptures like he does with the shrubs down in the suburban town earlier in the movie. But he's making these beautiful ice sculptures, and it causes it to snow. And then Danny Elfman's score swells. And it's like, ooh.
Oh, God.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having us, Nicole.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. It was really fun. Happy holidays.
If you liked what you heard, don't forget to rate us 5 stars and subscribe. We hope you have a really happy holiday season and a wonderful new year.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.